This morning, I would like to conduct an on-the-spot poll. This will require audience participation. Now, our poll this morning is this. Which among the great sporting events of our world is your favorite? Now, knowing that I could go on all day and we would never get to my favorite sport, which is actually competitive swimming, I have arbitrarily chosen four big ones, which you will have to select among. Namely, we're going to go baseball, football, golf, and soccer. Okay? Can we do that? Now, what we'll do is I will name off these four great sporting traditions, baseball, football, golf, and soccer. And we get to the one among those four that you truly cherish the most. I would like you to proclaim in some way. You can cheer, you can hoot. If you, like me, are wary of making loud noises in church, you can raise the roof. Whatever works. Okay? So let's begin. Baseball. Football. I knew you would do that. I knew it. It was either going to be you or Burt Miller that would do that. All right, ready? I'm looking at you, Ross. Golf. And soccer. As you can see, we have some profound feelings about these various sporting traditions. And as I begin my sermon, I have one question for you. Which among these great sports is unquestionably the best, without doubt the best, at scoring runs? Just hold on to that. This question is posed by Stephen Prothero, who's a professor at Boston University, in a book he wrote called God is Not One. And in this book, this question of the sporting tradition stands as a metaphor for the very real differences, the very real strengths, the sometimes very conflicting values of the world's great religions. In his book, Prothero challenges the idea that has been prevalent for at least 50 years that at their core, religions are really all one thing. That they are different ways up the mountain vying for the same sacred objective. An entity or force by many different names that guides them all but which is essentially one. To return to the question of this metaphor, which sport, baseball, football, basketball, soccer, golf, is best at scoring runs? Of course, the answer is baseball, because only in baseball does one aim at scoring runs. The question in this way speaks in a language that is only relevant to one among those various sporting traditions. It makes no sense to ask whether football could ever equal baseball in the art of scoring runs because fundamentally we are speaking two different languages. Similarly, only in Buddhism do you seek nirvana and only in Christianity do you seek salvation, just as different sports have different goals inherent at the outset of each event. The goals and objectives of the world's religious traditions are not one and the same. Salvation cannot simply be lumped in as one and the same with nirvana, and since they are not the same goal in the same way that scoring a run and sinking a putt aren't the same goal, they can't be easily conflated. The differences thus cannot be wiped away even by an earnest and important effort at cross-religious understanding. You see, baseball might just be the absolute best sport in America if your goal is scoring runs. Football reigns supreme if you are primarily going in for touchdowns and don't mind the cold. Golf is unquestionably superior at putting little white balls into tiny distant cups. And soccer is the only sport in the United States that is truly adept at getting people to put a thing in a basket, in a goal. I'm mixing up my sports. In any case, let's just let that pass. These aims are different. And while all of these practices might be wrapped up by a common moniker of sport, nobody assumes they're the same thing. And nobody pretends that their differences are a matter of detail. Christianity is unquestionably the best religion in the entire world at guiding a soul toward salvation. Then again, Christianity is really the only religion in the world that is aiming for salvation. Because original sin is a distinctly Christian concept, and salvation from it is simply a language nobody else speaks. Islam is uniquely aimed towards submission to the will of God, and as such, it is the best religion in the world at moving us toward complete surrender to the divine will. But you can't judge all religion based on the goals of just one. It doesn't work that way. And yet, at least over the last 50 years, both people of faith and the avowed faithless have endeavored to create this generalized, large-scale entity which bears the label religion. That entity, religion, bears both criticism and reverence under a single moniker, as if all of the movements and counter-movements, philosophies and creeds, churches and forest glens of faith would wear one name tag and be lifted up in one great glory, or cast aside as one hate-mongering unit. But the truth of it is that religion doesn't exist in general. Religion does not exist in general. There is no generic brand name for faith that encompasses the whole of that which bears the title. There are, after all, 10,000 things that might wear the label of cereal, but that doesn't mean that Cocoa Puffs and Grape Nuts have that much in common. As Stephen Prothero says, instead of a set of shared characteristics that can be easily dismissed or uplifted as a whole, what religions have in common is really something like a family resemblance. In his words, because religious traditions do not stay static as they move into new centuries, new countries, new circumstances, the differences within each tradition are vast. Religious scholars are quick to point out that there are many Buddhisms, not just one. And so it goes with all the world's religions. Christians align themselves with Roman Catholicism, Orthodoxy, Protestantism, and fast-growing Mormonism may in fact be the fourth branch. Jews call themselves Orthodox, Conservative, Reformed, Constructionist, Secular, and Hindus worship a dizzying variety of ways. And as every American and European soldier who has fought in Iraq and Afghanistan can attest, Shia and Sunni Islam are in many ways quite distinct. Why does this matter? Why is it essential to lift up and be honest about the unique and separate identities of the world's religious traditions? Prothero's book makes a good case for the simple necessity of being honest. Basically, he says, let's not tell lies about our faith. And if we keep pretending it's all the same thing under minor little differences, we'll never get around to the good and life-giving work of honest and peaceful disagreement. On a geopolitical level, it is not a bland assumption of sameness that fends off war, but honest engagement of differences and a concrete decision to stay in relationship with one another that keeps the missiles from flying. We ought not tell lies about religion. Fair enough. We ought not to pretend that the light cast through all those different windows in the cathedral of the world looks basically the same and falls in ways not so different from one another. We ought not to be so terrified of disagreement that we never have an honest conversation about the most important things in the whole world. But there's also another reason why I think we can't just assume that all religions are basically the same. A refusal to examine the very real differences inherent in the world's religious traditions robs us of the opportunity and the obligation to tackle the great questions of our existence. If there is any universal religious enterprise, it is the act of asking really big questions. Religion, whatever else it is or is not, exists as a place where sages and scholars and just general folks ask and answer questions like, what do I really want? How do I aim to get it? Who will guide me? And who's with me on the journey? Or as Prothero's book puts it, what is the problem? What is the solution? What is the technique for finding that solution? And who are the exemplars that chart my way forward? The great religions of the world pose all those questions, and they come up with very different answers. The problem in Buddhism is suffering. The problem for Christianity is sin. The problem for Islam is arrogance that separates us from Allah. The solutions are equally different, from repentance to freedom to submission, and the means of arriving at those ends is as varied as every box of cereal on that proverbial shelf. The point is that religion should, at its best, invite us to ask the big questions and keep on asking until we've found a solution, a pathway, a group of fellow travelers that can move forward with us on the journey. The problem, the solution, the pathway, and the fellow travelers, they might be found within the walls of the sanctuary. They might be found on the hillsides of the sacred earth. But to assume that every pathway is fundamentally the same is to rob us of the opportunity to revel in the different hopes and varied dreams of every human being. It seems to me that sometimes we underplay the differences in religious traditions because we are afraid of the conversations we might have if we admit how much we really disagree. As a culture, we're afraid that honest disagreement in regard to religion naturally leads to danger and pain. And so even in interfaith settings, we are reticent to invite a Muslim to speak about what submission means to her. We do not talk to the rabbi about the reality of exile in his own life and the lives of his people. We dance around these differing truths in an effort to maintain a modicum of peace, but in so doing, we also fail to really understand each other. It is not inconsequential to say that in addition, assuming all religion is one thing causes us to fail to speak honest judgment when judgment is the only honest thing. If each expression of religion has a different goal, the truth is that not all goals are equal. Not all gods are equal. Not all solutions to the problems posited by religion are helpful, and not all pathways are divine. Not all leaders are worth listening to. The Westboro Baptist Church, a tiny but loud little conglomeration of far fringe hate mongers, represent a particular expression of religion whose goal appears to be breaking the spirits of gay people and military service members. Apparently, their goal is not widely appealing because their membership remains under 100 loud people, and what they do with the religious impulse is nothing like what we do here or what our friends at Trinity Episcopal up the street do in their sanctuary or the faithful at Dar al-Nur Islamic Center up on the parkway. What they do is an infinitely lesser expression of the religious impulse. And their goal and our goal, their goal and the worshipers at the Islamic Center, their goal and the goals of our friends at Trinity Episcopal are nothing like the same thing. Different. Not necessarily equal, but different. In some ways, I lament having to preach about the example of the Westboro Baptists. Because not only are their numbers small and not representative of much of anything, but the numbers of religious people across the faith spectrum who hold such hateful, vitriolic goals are neither large nor representative of the whole. With the exception of those on the far fringes, most of the time, our differences are nothing to be afraid of. If anything, our congregation should be an exemplar for the wider world. A sign waving in bold relief, proclaiming, look, it is possible to truly disagree, fundamentally disagree without beating around the bush or making it up. It is possible to disagree and still stand alongside one another with gratitude and a willingness to be utterly transformed. Look, it is possible here, where atheists and Buddhists and Jews and Christians hold hands and sing about peace. It is possible here, so why should it not be possible out there? It is possible to be welcoming without turning diversity of opinion into so much pablum and pap. It is possible. And here, we invite you to ask the big questions. Not every goal is the same, and not every goal is equal, but our task as a spiritual and religious people is to ask what goal it is that you are setting out to achieve. Are you personally trying to hit a hole in one or kick a field goal? Are you lonely or are you frightened? What is the deep yearning that lies beneath your flesh and your bones? And how might you go about meeting that abiding need that you cannot escape, even if you try? In this way, the question becomes not a matter of which religion is right or which is wrong, not a matter of which religion is better at meeting its goals, but what goal you are actually trying to accomplish with your life. Because we must trust one another to truly state our beliefs and to stand alongside one another even in our differences, I will model this practice by telling you without shame that my goal, my personal goal, is to fashion my life so that it will conform more closely to the will of God. And I know, with some clarity, which God I'm talking about. My God, the one to whom I clasp my hands in prayer, and I do pray, is the great universalist God, the source and compelling force of all love. And I know that in many ways I am making up this God. I know that I am speaking my own language, that love cannot be fully teased apart from hate. I know that divinity is a separate concept, is basically a human construct. And I know that this God, as a separate entity, very likely does not technically exist. And I don't care. I want my life to be conformed to the yearnings of the source of all love. I want my life to be conformed to the will of God. That is my goal. In my faith, whether or not that source technically exists or not is irrelevant. What matters is the goal. To align myself with that love. A love that for me bears the name of the Holy. In order to meet that goal, among other things, I surround myself with you fine people. This is the place where I ask the big questions. And this is the place where I find my answers and where I am challenged to stand by them, even and especially when they are different from yours. We stand in the light-filled nave of the cathedral of the world. The light shines differently on us all, and those differences are not minor or inconsequential. The window through which I gaze is the eternal love from which we spring. And the window whose light falls upon your shoulders may well be the crystalline brightness of logic. My goal is to be conformed to the will of God, and yours might be to wake up every day with just enough hope to make it through. I might be playing basketball, and you might clutch the bat, but together, we must ask the great big question and face down our answers, utterly unafraid. May it be so, and amen.